Good morning, everyone. I've seen so many of you before. I want to thank the individuals who are in our audience for your interest. We appreciate you being here this morning. So my colleague, Mary Aquilino, raise your hand so people know who you are. This project would not have been successful without, I think, the two of us coming together and bringing this idea forward. So I have nothing to disclose. So the rationale for pharmacist involvement in a project such as reducing unintended pregnancy is really because they're highly accessible, they know about the products, and they are willing and able to talk to clients about contraceptives. So they're all across our country, our state, and they are highly accessible. We know from the literature that particularly community pharmacists are becoming more involved in some innovative practice activities. For example, in Washington State, community pharmacists worked under what's called a collaborative practice agreement to actually initiate hormonal contraceptives among a group of select women under the collaborative. So some community pharmacists are doing some really neat things. So we wanted to challenge our Iowa pharmacists to determine what their role might be in reducing unintended pregnancy. So what we hoped to achieve was that we could certainly try to demonstrate that pharmacies are a viable place to obtain information about contraceptives or pregnancy planning, and particularly as the focus of the Iowa Initiative among women 18 to 30 years old. And we hope to see changes in the sales of prescription and over-the-counter contraceptives, because we did have messages in the pharmacies that were saying, plan your pregnancy, use contraceptives. In terms of our study, we recruited 55 pharmacies in 12 counties from across Iowa. About 50% of those pharmacies were grocery pharmacies, and specifically those were in the Hy-Vee chain. So those of you in the Hy-Vee farm in grocery stores. So those of you from Iowa are very familiar with that. The remaining pharmacies that participated in the study were independent pharmacies. We were able to also generate a control group using Hy-Vee pharmacies. So we identified a set of control pharmacies that were similar to our study pharmacies, and then we had 32 Hy-Vee pharmacies who did not have our intervention materials in them, and then we were able to control sales over time with the treatment versus the control pharmacies. It is perhaps important for me to point out that no national chain would participate in our study. We tried to recruit all of them, honestly, and there was honestly fear around the topic. You know, they understood they sold contraceptives, but they're like, no, we can't do this, which I don't fully understand, but that's where we were. This shows you the counties where the pharmacy intervention occurred, so you can see we were all across the state, not just in Iowa City, which is important, and we had a differing number of pharmacies in each county. We did recruit 25% of the pharmacies in a county for that county to be eligible to be in our study. So this is what we asked the pharmacies and pharmacists to do, or allow us to do in their pharmacies. In terms of what the pharmacists had to do, they had an online continuing education program that they needed to complete, and the focus of that was really upon advice that they would give to consumers when they missed dosing of oral contraceptives. So we know from the literature that women who have used oral contraceptives longer actually report less knowledge about those products because they've just forgotten. You know, they're using them, they know what to do with them in theory. And so we wanted to encourage our pharmacists to have continued conversations, even though these were refills, as a pharmacist would say, these were refill prescriptions, but to have these new conversations with women who had been longtime oral contraceptive users. Within the pharmacy, we also needed them to cooperate and work with us. So, for example, we needed them to display our education and promotional materials over 2 to 3 years. Actually, it was a 3-year period, even though it says 2 right there. We asked them to use our educational brochures during their counseling sessions where it was appropriate. We had them from our evaluation actually distribute postcards for us so that we could obtain some online data from some of the individuals in their pharmacies. And then we had quarterly visits from research assistants going into the pharmacies. And then these research assistants would contact the pharmacies monthly, either by phone or female. Oh, that was a word. Stupid word. You guys don't know what that means, but it's relevant to this group over here. Okay, so what was I saying? We had our research assistants visit the pharmacies quarterly, and then they phoned or emailed the pharmacies monthly. That was a great example, Susan. Okay. Two different times we did some in-store surveys of clients that were coming in and out of the pharmacy, and honestly, we found that the cost-benefit of gathering those data were just not positive enough to continue that over the entire study. And we also saw the data we were getting from those in-store surveys was similar to what we were seeing in the online, so we just continued with the online surveys. This shows you some examples of our promotional materials. This was from our very first effort. We went in and changed our materials every quarter so that there were new signs, new messages, new colors. And the posters were 2x3, so 2 feet by 3 feet. They were pretty big. And then we had some that were 18 by 24. So we had larger as well as smaller ones. Then we have shelf talkers that were put in the pharmacy on the shelves where contraceptives were. And then we also had educational brochures that were typically by the cash register. And this is in the lower right, left corner. No, that'd be my left. You're right. Is an example of a brochure for contraceptive options. This is a very busy brochure, but what it does is it shows the full range of contraceptives that are available. And so the pharmacist could talk about, well, here's the one you're using. You could consider something else. Or, you know, these are the different options that are available to you. And again, this is another example of some materials so that you can see the poster is a different color. The brochure is a different color. So those are examples from two different quarterly campaigns that we put together. You should also know that these messages and these campaigns were built upon a set of focus group and pharmacist interviews that occurred during year one, so that we developed messages, we had individuals review them, and we had individuals, consumers, as well as pharmacists, review the materials that we had then put together. So we didn't just sit in an office in Iowa City and say, hocus pocus, these are our materials. In terms of the evaluation, I'm going to talk about three different issues here. I've got some data about consumer attitudes and their behavior. I've got a bit of data about the pharmacist surveys and pharmacy staff attitudes. And then finally, I'll show you a couple of graphs about the contraceptive sales. Just as Dr. Loesch had said earlier, you know, we have lots of data. And so this is a snapshot of what we have that we will eventually be sharing in terms of manuscripts and other presentations. So in terms of talking with pharmacy staff, what these next few slides show you are data from the 2011 random digit dialing phone survey that Dr. Loesch conducted from the University of Northern Iowa. And so what we have done is we've taken the counties where our pharmacy intervention occurred and called them intervention counties. And the remaining counties are the control counties. And so we have compared questions that we had in that survey that were related to our pharmacy intervention. And I think it's important to note that you will see a lot of statistically significant findings, but what's really important is what's the magnitude of that difference? We need to think about not just the statistical importance, but the clinical importance of that. You know, we talk about what's that effect size. And so while things are statistically important, I'm a little less positive in all instances about the clinical significance, and so I can talk to you about that. So, for example, in this first bit of data, more women in the intervention counties, right here, more women in the intervention county, 16.2, reported talking with pharmacists about birth control than in the control counties, which was 13.7. So that is statistically significant. It is almost a 3% difference. So I think we need to think about whether that's clinically meaningful. I think we could think about that. What we do, we also surveyed women in, Dr. Loesch surveyed women in 2009 and 2011, and what we know is that overall that rate of talking with the pharmacist actually stayed the same, and it was right around 14% across all counties. And what we know is that women who were who reported using birth control most or every time versus rarely or never were, of course, much more likely to report that they were talking to pharmacy staff about their contraceptives. In terms of perceived barriers, this was a bit disappointing. About 20% of individuals reported being uncomfortable buying over-the-counter birth control at the local pharmacy, and this was really true in the intervention or the control counties. It was really sitting at that, 20% of individuals saying, this is tough in my rural community, and most likely because I know the people in the pharmacy, and they're going to watch me buy contraceptives. Yikes. We also know from our online surveys talking with pharmacy staff about birth control was perceived as easier over time. So 57% of women reported that it was easy to talk with pharmacists in early 2010, compared with 72% in late 2011. What you have to keep in mind, though, is that this is a convenience sample. So, we may have people responding who are just more positive about the pharmacy in general. And then this graph shows you percents on the y-axis and three different variables along the x-axis. And this first variable is not enough information available, and so we would want that to be lower. The next variable is over-the-counter birth control is easy or very easy to obtain, so you would like that to be higher. And then the third variable is availability of low-cost birth control in the community was perceived as good or excellent. And again, these are from the 2011 data where we were able to control intervention counties where our pharmacy intervention was going on to control counties where it was not. And I think really the most remarkable thing here is this set of data right here where about 74% of women in the intervention county are reporting that low-cost options are available in their community. This wasn't just in the pharmacy. Whereas in the control counties, that number was 60%. So clearly that's statistically significant, and I would assert clinically significant as well. And what that says to me is that people who are buying their contraceptives in the pharmacy really don't see an issue with availability in their community. So if they're buying them in the pharmacy, then they're like, oh yeah, they're available in my community. So as a pharmacist, that makes me think that if we can promote uptake in pharmacies, then that gives a better perspective of what's going on in one's community. In terms of recall about any of our messages, this is from the data from the 2011 post-survey. Most people in the intervention counties were likely to recall seeing, more people in the intervention counties were likely to recall seeing or hearing messages about birth control in a pharmacy than individuals in the control counties. And unlike Dr. Robert Stobie reported, in our study, we saw that people actually may have fatigued about the messages. In our online surveys of pharmacy consumers, posters and brochures were recalled to a greater extent during the first half of the study than towards the end of the study. In terms of what pharmacists thought about this, you can read these specific data here, but the reality is they enjoyed being in the study, they thought it was a positive thing, and they would like to do future similar efforts. Okay? So again, I think that public health folks don't always think about community pharmacies and pharmacists as a place of information, as an access point, but I would suggest to you that in certain circumstances, such as contraceptive use, it's a logical place to think about. And then I've got two graphs about contraceptive sales. So this first graph shows you condom sales, And what you can see is that over the 3 years, so this is year one, year two, year three, you can see the number of condoms decreasing in both treatment and control pharmacies. Remember, in this analysis, we have treatment pharmacies, and then we have that set of Hy-Vee pharmacies that were our comparison control pharmacies. Okay, so these are sales data right out of pharmacies, and they were reporting these to us. And what we conclude from this is that our intervention was perhaps able to buffer the decrease in sales. This is a statistically significant difference in that the decrease in our treatment pharmacies was less than the decrease in the control pharmacies. When we look at oral contraceptive sales, those actually stayed pretty flat in our pharmacies, whether they were treatment or control. And I know that other investigators in our group have other data about these trends, but in our particular pharmacies, the sales just stayed pretty flat. And there was no difference in the treatment or the control. So what? Again, we were trying to show that pharmacies are a viable place to obtain information about contraceptives, and I think that we have some data to support that. I know the yes but is there because we did not have a randomized control trial. You know, we can't say this intervention caused these changes in attitudes or an increase in likelihood of talking with the pharmacist or an increase in the actual number who did talk with the pharmacist. So we have to be cautious about the causal inferences that we make. I do think from the sales perspective with our treatment and control, we've done a very complex analysis in terms of controlling for type of pharmacy and different counties that the individuals were in. I'm actually a little more confident in that data wherein our intervention appeared to buffer a decrease in condom sales. So what can we do in the future? I think that there's actually a real opportunity to think about how community pharmacists can be increasingly involved in reducing unintended pregnancy. I mentioned earlier that we do have some neat work around the country about collaborative practice agreements to renew oral contraceptives and to initiate oral contraceptives. One of the positive things about me moving to Michigan is that in Michigan, pharmacists can actually initiate prescriptions under collaborative practice agreements. So under that same protocol they used in Washington State, we could have community pharmacies, you know, around the state of Michigan initiating hormonal contraceptive. That would have to be in a collaborative practice agreement with a local physician, but we definitely have the opportunity there to do that. I think it's also important if local health departments can think about community pharmacists as a way to intervene and to interact with clients about particular health messages. And so, you know, that's one of my goals, to raise the role of community pharmacists in a public health role. That's certainly supported by the American Public Health Association. It's supported by the American Pharmacist Association. In future, we would also need to include other corporate pharmacies. We know that they certainly have about 60% of the marketplace, and so their absence is not good. So we need to figure out how to partner with them on a topic such as this so that they're amenable to having messages in their pharmacy, because certainly they're amenable to selling the products. So we need to figure out that balance with them. So that's the end of my talk, and I want to thank all of our study staff, particularly Jeannie Kimball, who is not here, but our field RAs, Michelle, Megan, Scott, and Jen. They were critical to keeping Mary and I on track.